Dana and Carol on K104. It's Happy Hour.
Welcome to Happy Hour with lawyer and TV personality Jonna Spilbore and author and inspirational speaker Carol Pesci. Happy Hour comes your way every Sunday morning at this time with life advice, real conversations, and awesome interviews with self-help heavy hitters, best-selling authors, celebrities, and more. Would you like to maybe live better, stress less, and laugh more? Then you've come to the right place. This is Happy Hour on K104, and we are back for another what I'm sure to be, or what is sure to be, a fantastic show.
Who is this? I support your surety.
Okay, yes, it is John, it is Carol, it is myself, and a fantastic guest coming up later on, and her book, The Empath Survival Guide.
Yeah, so we have coming up in the next segment Dr. Judith Orloff. She's the author of a number of books, and the book we are going to be talking to her about is The Empath's Survival Guide. There's certain characteristics about you that you might think are personality quirks, but you actually might be an empath. So we're going to talk about exactly what that is. She's actually going to give us a quiz to find out if you are, in fact, an empath, one of which was, just giving a cue, don't like itchy clothes, that's me, take my own car to parties so I can leave when I'm ready, that kind of stuff. So she's super sharp. Love her. When we come back, we'll be talking to her.
I think we're going to have a lot of listeners who are going to be surprised to find out this morning that they are indeed empaths.
Last time you and I spoke to her, we both figured out that we were.
Oh, yeah. But I'm like an empath times 10, which is probably a quality of an empath. You over-exaggerate everything.
Good point, yes.
So, yeah, I'm looking forward. And we've had her on before, and she's great. And it's going to be a very enlightening interview. It always is with her.
Yeah, so find out if you're an empath. And if so, how you can
survive.
Survive,
right?
Yeah,
the Empath Survival Guide. Yeah. So, speaking of surviving stuff.
Oh, boy. This is Frankenberry. Why do I get the sense this is going to be an over-dramatization of something?
Well, you know what we need? We need some music now for the drama segment from Jonna.
Like heavy organ. Like bum, bum, bum.
Jonna drama.
Right. Jonna drama.
Right. We'll have to work on that for next week.
And now it's time for Jonna drama. Let us bring to the stage now Jonna Spilbore. Famous for melodramatic stories.
You must pay the rent, but I can't pay the rent. So anyways, I had a question for you guys because something happened to me during the week and I wanted to raise it here to have a broad discussion. And here's what happened. So I went to the lovely Radio City Music Hall.
Nice.
For a show. And it was actually a one-man show. It was a comedian. So it wasn't like a broad, what do you call it, musical
production,
where there's a lot of people and you're kind of looking all over the place. It wasn't one of those shows. It was very focused, one person on stage. And I go, and Radio City Music Hall seats over 6,000 people. And it's a lovely venue.
Right.
And I show up about 15 minutes ahead of time for this show. And I take my seat. And lo and behold, I am behind a wall of a man, like a very, very large man. And so, now I'm staring at his, the back of his head and his broad shoulders, and I kind of chuckle to myself because it's not the first time something like this has happened to me. Maybe because I'm, 5'2" and a half. I don't know. But it amused me first before it annoyed me. And so I took a picture of the back of this person's head, and I posted it on Facebook. Like, hey, here's where I'm sitting. Right? So, and I was, what I found interesting was some people were posting on, commenting on that, oh, you should have said something. That's so rude.
What do you say? You're too tall. You can't sit there.
And that got me thinking. I'm like, what do you say to somebody? It's not like his fault. He didn't pick, okay, God, when I emerge from this womb, I would like to be 6'7" someday.
And when I go to the theater, put me in the front.
Yes. So but that's what really interests me. I'm like, all right, so where are we now in society when it comes to these kind of, I'll call it an annoyance, but I mean stuff that you almost can't help. Like, for example, it got me thinking, I have a family member who has to buy two seats when she flies because the airlines require, if you're large, that you have to do that. Many airlines do now. Or I've seen on airplanes where a tall person is sitting behind you and complains to the flight attendant if you want to put your seat back because now that person's knees is in his or her chin. Like, so what do we do as a society now? Do we just kind of suck it up? are we supposed to say something? Was I supposed to tap this man on the shoulder and say, would you mind slouching? Like, what was I supposed to do? Carol, I will call upon
you. She's raising her hand.
I think in that circumstance, you got to suck it up. Look, if you are too large to fit into an airplane seat, I understand that because you can't physically, safely have people next to each other if you don't have your full seat available to you. I mean, that's just, that's a safety issue. So I get that. Your situation is an annoyance issue. The guy wasn't doing anything wrong. He's not being a jerk.
Didn't do anything wrong. No.
I wouldn't be happy about it. But you just got to suck it up. Lean to the left, lean to the right, enjoy the show.
So then let me tell you what happened. So that's exactly what I was doing. I was watching this show as if I were watching a ping pong game, and this person's head was the net. And then all of a sudden, you know, 20, 30 minutes into the show, I'm saying to myself, am I now being the annoying person?
Yes, I was just going to say that.
So
if I were behind you,
am I annoying the people behind me?
Still?
Right. And then I got self-conscious about that. And then I, you know, do I stop because I don't want to annoy the people behind me? Or do I do what I got to do to see the show that I paid handsomely to see?
Or did you think about approaching management if the show wasn't sold out and saying, listen, do you mind if we switch our seats and go sit somewhere else?
Ooh.
Because, I mean, that's got to be an issue that management has run into on quite a number of occasions, is somebody who happens to be very tall or very large sitting in front of somebody who's small.
That's a great, and I didn't think to do that
idea.
Because I did not see any empty seats.
It depends on whether the show's sold out or not. I mean, it might not be possible.
That's always worth asking. I have another idea.
What's that?
Since you are a little bit vertically challenged when you're not wearing your 5-6-inch stilettos, when you go to these shows like this, you could carry with you in your purse a blow-up pillow. Now, if you have a difficult time finding them, you can, I know they make blow up like hemorrhoid pillows.
Go to whoopeecushion.com.
Yep. So you could carry that with you. And then if you get behind somebody who's really tall, you just blow up your hemorrhoid pillow quietly. So no, you don't attract attention. Sit that under you and raise yourself taller. You're welcome.
And you know what, Carol? I'm going to have to shoot this down because this is Jonna.
I got
to
shoot it
down,
too.
Do you know what happened with that? You want to know why?
Why?
Because with Jonna in the middle of the show, somehow the air would start coming out and it would start sounding like a whoopee cushion.
And she's not having
and
that.
And I would kill myself.
Yes, especially with how we know how you feel about that particular bodily function.
Now, so I'm going to say, now, Carol, over the years, you have had many, 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 many million-dollar ideas, fabulous ideas.
Yes.
This is not one of them. But because here's another reason why. Here's another. I thought about sitting on my coat. I had a very puffy coat. I could have scrunched it up and set it. And then I said to myself, then I'm just paying it backwards if I do that. Then I'm making the person behind me have to watch ping pong style. And that's another question. Like, I won't do that. I will sit here and suffer and then complain about it on a radio show versus make somebody else, perhaps put somebody else out. Is that normal? I don't know.
I think it's the right thing to do. And I was just about to give you a bitch citation and now I can't.
So now you have to take it back. You save that citation for someone else.
But it's a good one.
What does it say?
Here.
Oh, thank you.
So these are these little tear-off sheets that say bitch citation on the top, and it says you're such a, and then there's like 100 different options I could choose from.
Yeah.
I haven't given you one in a while.
You haven't.
What one did I pick there?
Gin soused B is what you picked.
Okay.
Which was better than rude B or smelly B or snaggle-toothed B. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So,
I think you did the right thing.
But now, okay, so I did the right thing because this person was tall. That person cannot help being tall. I didn't want to bother the people behind me. But what if, you know, take it a step further. What if somebody were sitting in front of me and they were wearing too much perfume? What if somebody were sitting next to me and they had, like, B.O.? Do we then? Are we supposed to say something? Do we still live in an age where we just suck it all up?
Sometimes you have to. That is the...
It's the beauty of people living together.
It's the beauty of being in public. But I will say, if you are one of those people who wears way too much perfume, stop it.
It is annoying.
It is gross. Like, when somebody walks by you and it's just like pig pen from peanuts, mm-hmm. but it's just this cloud of really strong perfume.
Right, but
you think
that
you smell good.
But the thing is, you don't know where that person is coming from. You don't know why they wear too much. Maybe they're not able to notice that they're wearing that much, and nobody in their own little bubble of a world has said to them, hey,
you stink.
You know, Lynn, enough. You know, back it off a little bit. Mm-hmm. Or maybe they do that because they've got some issues, some self-confidence issues, and they think that helps them. They think that makes them more attractive. Maybe that's what they think is going to attract
like
a guy.
I feel it's a way of like taking up more space than you really are.
And
like,
there is that. There's also like, folks out there that are just...
I feel like it's invasive. When you wear really strong perfume on purpose and then go out in public or, God forbid, into a closed room for a meeting...
Mm-hmm.
I think that's inconsiderate to other people. It's invasive.
It is
of their
inconsiderate.
Experience.
I had a very good friend who coined this phrase, your rights stop at the end of my nose.
Ooh.
And I like that. And we actually had her on the show many, 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 many years ago. Lise Wheel. She's
sure.
who said that.
Yep.
And I do agree with that, but I'm not the kind, I don't think I have ever in my entire life, as outspoken as I am, I don't think I've ever said to somebody, you're wearing too much perfume or your body odor is offensive. What I have done, the only time I've ever spoken up when I felt, I don't know, bothered, is if somebody were standing too close to me. Like the one time, like, you know, one of the few occasions that I went to a grocery store and there was a person who like kept bumping into me with the cart while we were all waiting in line like numerous times. And I finally turned to that person. I'm like, you know, first time, okay. Second time, third time, it's no longer an accident, lady. Like, stop bumping me. Now, even when I retell that story, I'm like, maybe it was me. Maybe I was in a bad mood.
Well, no, she kept actually hitting your physical person. It's not just you.
Yeah.
But yes, I understand, and I think, I don't know, a lot of this in the long run, I think Carol and I might be in the same wavelength here. There are so many possibilities and so many variables for what you might say to somebody else as to where it's going to turn.
Yeah.
Now, if somebody is doing something that is obviously rude, or if somebody is standing in line and they've decided that they're going to take out their crappy day on the teller, you know, or they're going to mm-hmm. take out their crappy day on the cashier, that's a different story. If somebody is making fun of somebody's disability, or if somebody is yelling when they don't need to be yelling, yes, you have a right to stand up because now you're doing something that is out of the norm. But I don't think you can really look at somebody and say, listen, you know what? Your perfume's bothering me. If that's the case, well, you know what? Then you back off and get a little bit outside of that circle of perfume smell. You know,
right.
Because I mean, it's not your, that might be what they do to make themselves attractive.
And it's very subjective. What
if somebody came up to somebody else and said, you know what, I think you wear too much makeup.
Yeah.
That kind of thing is, and they have an opinion about people who wear too much makeup, and you never know. Maybe it goes to that next, you know, and you don't need it to go
but
there.
But it doesn't invade on my experience if you wear a lot of makeup.
Right. You might not want to look at me. That might bother you for some reason. But it's not, I'm not encroaching on your personal space.
Right out of the attorney's mouth.
Yeah. Not an encroacher. I think, you know, the thing that sparked me wanting to talk about this was the encroachment issue, whether it's your olfactory senses or whether it's your airspace when you're at a theater or the seat next to you when you're on an airplane. How much encroaching are we expected to tolerate as a society? And I think it's quite a lot. I really do.
Oh, yes. I think expected to tolerate. Yes, it is quite
a lot. But I also think, and maybe it's me, I don't know. If I were 6'5", when I'm buying tickets to a show, I probably would want to try to get a seat at the end, or I might not get, you know, in the first however many row. I might. And I could be talking out of school here because I'm not 6'5". I don't know what goes through a tall person's mind when it comes to that. Maybe they don't care. Maybe like, hey, you know what? This show you're going to be behind me. The next show you're not going to be behind me.
I'm sure there are some people who do care, and I'm sure there are some people who don't. And you don't know which one you're going to run into.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that, you know, and with a sold out show, what's he going to do? You know, maybe it is a person that says, well, you know what, can you give me something that's up against the wall or something that's on the aisle? And they say, well, there's nothing left available, so it is what it is.
So that's why we need to put the onus on, like, for example, my car. My car has this wonderful seat.
I don't know where it
came. My car has this wonderful seat. I can push a button, and it goes all the way down so I can barely see over the dashboard, or I could lift it all the way up where I feel like the queen of the world. Maybe seats need to be, widen them, shorten them, tall them at the push of a button so each individual can do what they want. Now, I know that'll add a ton of money to the price of everything we do. but we could put a man on the moon.
Blow up pillow.
And just
I'm
hope
standing
it,
by that idea.
And just hope it doesn't burst
even though both
halfway
you
through the show.
Shot it down.
We did.
I think it's brilliant.
We shot it down.
All right. Shall we take a break?
We shall. Yeah. And we've got, again, Dr. Judith Orloff on the way.
Yes, she is the author of many books. The book we are going to talk to her about is The Empath's Survival Guide, Life Strategies for Sensitive People. We're going to do the quiz to find out if you are an empath, what it means to be an empath, and what are some strategies you can use to make your life more enjoyable.
All right, that is on the way. This is Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol, and we shall return. It's K104.
Jonna and Carol on K104. It's Happy Hour.
Live better, laugh harder. It's Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol.
And it's Happy Hour. We're back with Jonna and Carol, and also our special guest today, Dr. Judith Orloff. She is going to talk to us about her book, The Empath's Survival Guide.
I love Dr. Orloff. We've talked to her many times in the past. Mm-hmm. I've read many of her books, and one of the things that I love so much about her is her knowledge, her psychiatric knowledge is absolutely amazing, but the love and wisdom that she puts behind her words and how she delivers it is just absolutely beautiful. Mm-hmm. You're going to love her. So Dr. Judith Orloff, she is the author of The Empath's Survival Guide, Life Strategies for Sensitive People. Dr. Orloff is a psychiatrist, an empath, and is on the UCLA Psychiatric Clinical Faculty. She synthesizes traditional medicine with knowledge of intuition, energy, and spirituality, pretty much what I just said. Mm-hmm. Dr. Orloff also specializes in treating empaths and highly sensitive people in her private practice. Her work has been featured on The Today Show, CNN, Oprah Magazine, and USA Today. She is a New York Times best-selling author. You can find out more about her. We'll read this again at the end of our interview. DrJudithOrloff.com. Dr. Orloff, welcome back to our show.
Thank you. I'm happy to be on.
So it's funny. I know we talked to you about this topic before, and when we were going through the checklist in your book, Jonna and I, the last time, as to whether or not we were empaths, I'm like, check.
We had all of them.
Check.
Yep.
Check. Eat wool clothing. I always want to have my own car. Like, so many of the things fit me. I couldn't believe it. So I guess maybe we could begin with, tell our listeners, please, what is an empath? What does it mean to be an empath? And then maybe we'll get into the quiz.
Yeah. Well, an empath is a very, very sensitive person who is sensitive to noise, smells, sounds, lights, excessive talking, and they also absorb the other energies of the world or emotions into their own bodies, so they tend to get exhausted or burn out, and they can't tell what's what, whether they're picking up somebody else's anger or depression, whether it's their anger or depression. And so the challenge is, and what I teach my patients as a psychiatrist, is how to know the difference and how not to absorb other people's stress into your own bodies. That's not a good thing, because the pros of being an empath, you know, the positives are, you know, empaths are intuitive, they're sensitive, they're loving, they're giving, they care about you, they have a deep feeling for nature, poetry, the depth of human relationships. Many go into healthcare, you know, and so there's so many beautiful gifts that our world needs now so desperately. So my reason in writing the Empath Survival Guide is to help all you empaths out there balance this great gift, so you don't just feel tired or worried or frustrated, you know, all the time.
And sometimes,
which can happen.
And sometimes what you're saying is, if you're an empath, you might feel these negative things or stress, and you might not even be able to identify why you are.
Well, that's the problem. I mean, most people who don't know they're empaths just think, I feel terrible all the time. I'm so tired. Why am I depressed? Why don't I, you know, feel like going out? Why do I dislike parties? Why do I feel drained in malls? You know, all of that, because they don't know that they're just very sensitive to energy. And if you go into a mall, let's say, shopping mall, you have a million people there, and their energy fields extend way beyond their bodies. And empaths can sense this energy called chi, and it's just so much to take in. And unless empaths have skills and strategies on how not to take it in so they can enjoy their shopping experience or whatever, then they're going to feel very confused and exhausted and go through the medical system and have every test in the book and then probably be put on an antidepressant and sent to a psychiatrist.
Wow.
Which is not the correct treatment, the first-line treatment for being an empath.
How did you discover that you are an empath?
Well, I've been an empath and very sensitive since I've been a little girl. where I couldn't go into shopping malls or crowded places because I'd walk in feeling fine and walk out exhausted. And I just, you know, was always pretty much a loner except for one friend, and that's very typical, you know, of empaths, just a best friend or a few friends. And I always was intuitive, and I, you know, made intuitive predictions that scared my parents. And so I kind of came from that deep sense of, you know, being an only child, being alone, not liking being with tons of people. And so I knew that then, but I didn't have a word for it. And my parents just said, oh, dear, you need a thicker skin. Mm-hmm. And that's not helpful if you're raising empathic children to say that. They were well-meaning, but you don't want a child to grow a thicker skin. I have a chapter in the Empath Survival Guide on raising empathic children so you can enhance their gifts. You can help them be the best they could possibly be and not schedule them on 20 million play dates, you know, and not expect them to be involved with video games or football games or, you know, all those things that empaths typically don't like, which is fine. Everybody's different.
But unfortunately, the school system
doesn't, you know, encourage the empath enough.
I'm not sure that they understand it.
Yeah.
Can we get into a bit of the quiz? If somebody's listening right now and they're saying, I'm experiencing some of these things that you're talking about, am I an empath? Can we get into, you have a bit of a quiz, questions people
can ask. I do. In the front of the Empath Survival Guide, I have a 20-question self-assessment test where you can self-diagnose yourself as an empath because it's not rocket science. You just have to go through the questions and see if you identify, you know, such as, do I revive myself alone versus going out with people?
Check.
Do I get overwhelmed by noise, smells, and excessive talking?
Check.
Do I like to take my own car places so I could leave when I please?
Hello.
So I don't get trapped.
Oh, for Jonna, she gets a driver.
Oh, right.
By the way,
she has
an escape
plan before she gets there. That's me.
Yeah. Do I sometimes overeat to protect myself from absorbing negative energy?
No, mm-hmm. I wouldn't say that.
Oh,
Maybe that's too much wine.
That's because you're 80 pounds. Yes, check.
No. Yeah, and sometimes empaths are attracted to narcissists. And there's the toxic attraction between empaths and narcissists that they empaths have to watch out for because it can be very, very destructive. Mm-hmm. And are you attracted to nature and revive yourself in nature?
Check.
And I don't camp, but but I do like nature. I feed raccoons.
Yes,
you
do feed raccoons. Small parties rather than large social gatherings.
Definitely.
Yeah, and so do you prefer one-to-one interaction with friends rather than large, noisy groups?
Oh, God, yes.
Okay, all right. Well, so those are some of them.
Do you think you could diagnose us right now on those questions alone as being empaths? Do you think we are?
Absolutely. And do you replenish yourself alone versus with other people?
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. Can I tell you, can I make an admission to you, like if we were having a session right now, Dr. Orloff?
I want to make sure, since this might be embarrassing, that's Jonna talking.
It's Jonna talking. Sorry, because it will be embarrassing. But I have actually, I do on regular occasions. Here's what happens to me. Let's say I'm driving home after a long day at the office, and there's absolutely no food in my house. So I'll gear myself up, like, for half the day. I'm going to stop at the grocery store, and I'm going to get one thing, and I'm going to be in there for 2 minutes. That's it. I'm going to walk out. I'm going to go home, and then I'm going to make dinner. And by the time it comes time to actually drive myself to the store, I will have convinced myself that I'd rather eat a Tide Pod that I have on my washing machine than go to the grocery store and buy spaghetti.
Right.
And I do that every time.
Right. Yeah. So that's diagnostic.
See? That was really Carol.
I don't think that's really that embarrassing. The other question that's on your quiz, Dr. Orloff, is do I have chemical sensitivities, which I don't, or can't tolerate scratchy clothes? I cannot stand anything that itches me as far as clothing. Wool, forget it.
Can you wear turtleneck sweaters?
No way.
I can if they're not too tight or thick. Like really thin weight ones, I will.
I can, but it's only because I'm still angry at my mother.
Yeah, and All right. You know, in terms of intimate relationships, one of the questions on the quiz is, am I afraid of becoming suffocated by intimate relationships?
Give you a check on that one.
I think I could give you a check on that one. Like, I wonder how many of these qualities are too many. I mean, some of them you can attribute. Like, I can understand itchy clothes. I bet you there are a lot of people who aren't empaths who don't like itchy clothes. Like, at what point do you say, okay, you definitely could be diagnosed an empath?
Well, there's different ways to score the test in the book. And if you've answered 1 to 5 questions, you're at least partially an empath. And responding 6 to 10 questions means you have moderate empathic tendencies. And yes to 11 to 15 means you have strong empath. And more than 15 questions, you are a full-blown empath. So those are that's the scoring of the are you an empath test. So you could just find out, you know, right now. And, you know, what a lot of people are doing are educating their healthcare professionals who don't know about this, and they're sometimes giving the book to their doctors so that they could understand what being an empath is, so they could understand, you know, them better. So it's really important that your physicians and people who love you know about this.
And for you to know and to understand, there's nothing wrong with you. This is just a personality. I don't know if characteristics is the right description, but this is how you're made up. And there's many wonderful characteristics of being an empath.
Right. Like, it's not a disease or a disorder.
Right, nothing wrong with
right?
you.
No, unfortunately, it's sometimes called sensory processing disorder.
Oh.
And disorder, I have a big problem with the word disorder. Mm-hmm. But this is not a disorder. It's a personality type, and it's how you interact with the world. And empaths are beautiful, and I feel so passionate about supporting them. So they're just not always tired or wanting to stay home or agoraphobic or anxious. But they can really use their intuition and their sensitivities to help themselves, help the world. As empathy is the medicine the world needs more than ever now.
That's so
and
true.
Empaths can bring it forth, and I'm traveling around the country with this book helping empaths to do that. So I feel really, really strongly about this, that empaths need to come out of the closet and embrace your gifts and deal with the challenges. And in the book, I present a number of strategies to deal with the challenges so they don't get you.
See, that's the good news, right? So if you discover that this is you and that you're an empath, there are ways to, I don't know, enhance, use it as a gift as opposed to something that would hold you back. And can you give us an example? Give us an example of something that we could do right now if we're an empath.
If you're an empath, if you really want to know how someone else is feeling, you can get very quiet, open your heart, and intuitively tune into them to know where they're really at. So you don't have to figure them out. You know, maybe they feel sad to you on an intuitive level. Maybe they feel happy. Maybe they feel in pain. But by listening with your intuition, you can get a lot of information about people that they don't necessarily tell you. So it helps you to tune in to other people. And it helps you to appreciate other people's sensitivities and to find like-minded kindred souls who can be friends. So you can have friends who understand you. Because I know as a only child growing up with 2 physician parents and 25 physicians in my family, I didn't feel like anyone understood me. I felt all alone. And that's not good for empaths. And also, just in terms of those who go into the helping professions, I'm giving a workshop here in California just for healthcare professionals who are empaths. And how to be a healthcare professional who's an empath and not absorb your patient's pain. You know, how to give your all to someone but not get burned out from
it.
So,
that's got to be priceless.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is.
Especially and in that field.
Yeah, but the thing is people need to be taught. I mean, this is just, you know, for healthcare professionals. But I also give workshops for the general population, you know, like at the New York Open Center on March 17th, where anyone could come. You know, let's say you just found out you're an empath and, you know, you want to know, what can I do about it? What can I do to feel better? What can I do to embrace my gifts and, you know, really, you know, be more whole? This can be taught. The good news is this all can be taught. And, you know, I want to do that for people because I've had to do it with myself because I'm such a full-blown empath. I am a full-blown empath, and I'm every day it's a energy management session with me every day, you know, where I want my energy to go. You know, and I have to intuitively tune into myself every day to make those decisions. And empaths need to learn how to set boundaries and to say no.
Can I ask you a basic question? So let's say, so you're in, to strategize around being an empath. So let's use the example of you don't like to go to big parties ever. Would part of the survival guide or the strategy be we figure out how to go ahead and like big parties, or we just simply get totally okay with never going to another big party for the rest of our lives and we make no excuses about it?
Well, either way, you know, sometimes I don't prefer going to big parties, but sometimes I do. And then I just make sure that I don't have a really busy day that day, so I'm not burnt out to begin with.
Oh.
And, yeah, so I'm in a good energetic state when I go, and that I give myself permission to stay a short period of time, like maybe an hour, 2 hours, and, you know, I'll get an Uber or I'll take my own car, whatever, but I tell people, my friends know I'm an empath and my partner knows I'm an empath, so you know, it's just part of who I am that I've shared with people, so it's just kind of what they expect now.
You just hit on a point I think is important. If you discover through listening to the show, through going to your event, that which we'll promo again here in a minute, or reading your book, The Empath's Survival Guide, if you discover that you are definitely an empath, you mentioned that your partner now knows this about you. And I think that if you are in a committed, long-term, intimate relationship, it would be really, or the people closest to you, to let them know that, so that maybe there's certain things they don't take personally, or so that they can work with that and not work against it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's why I wasn't in long-term enduring relationships for so long, because I was always afraid to express my empath needs with a man that, you know, he would consider me too intense or too high maintenance, or, you know, and I always try to, you know, not show them, which is the kiss of death for an empath, because, you know, by the 2-year point, I'm about to blow, you know, it's like, I can't stand it anymore. I have to be on my own. And that's because I'm not expressing my needs along the way. So with this particular partner who I've been with almost 5 years, I made it a vow that I was going to be honest with him. And he's very, very understanding of me and very supportive.
Can two empaths have a good relationship together?
Yeah, they can. He's not an empath at all. He's the opposite of an empath. You know, so which I love, you know, because I wouldn't want another empath. I'm enough to handle on myself. So he's very grounded and doesn't get thrown off by things. But he also doesn't sense energy in the way I do. But it's a good balance. But in the book, I have different possibilities. What if you're an empath who's in love with another empath?
Right.
How do you do that? What if you're an empath in love with an intellectual, or an empath, you know, with a rock? You know, that's what my partner is, somebody strong, steady, available, you know, not a game player, you know, right there for you. You know, how do you do that? And with empaths who are involved with empaths, the danger is when you're both triggered or upset or overwhelmed, you're going to make each other worse or crazy by talking about it. So at those times, you have to go off to your own separate spaces. You have to begin to really work with yourself, using the techniques in the book, meditating, visualizing, going in a bath, getting out in nature, learning to set boundaries that day so you're not overwhelmed. You know, time management. You know, no is a complete sentence. You know, you've got to practice a lot of the strategies I put forth in the book so that your energy can calm down and you're not on sensory overload anymore. But you don't want to trigger each other. Two empaths can trigger each other and just make things a lot worse because they're both so intense. So you have to, you know, when I work with empath couple, I teach them, you know, how to do these things so they're prepared. But that's how potent education is in this one area, because people don't know how to deal with it.
Well,
they're not defining things in the context that I'm presenting it to them, so they have to get used to thinking about their lives differently.
You may have just saved some marriages, because let's say you got a couple and one of them is an empath, doesn't know it till they listen to this show. And and because, you know, say that person wants to be alone more than the other person wants to be alone, and the other person doesn't understand that and then gets resentful.
Right.
Right.
But now, once they figure out that one of them is an empath, they can work on that and strategize
and not take it personally,
right.
Realize it's a personality characteristic.
Oh, yeah. And with my partner, I like to sleep alone sometimes. And so we've had to talk about that. You know, I don't want to sleep with someone in the same bed every night. I need my space, you know, sometimes when I sleep. And I'm a big dreamer. I like to remember my dreams in the morning. So we've had to talk about it, you know. And, you know, we keep renegotiating all the time.
So I like that word.
That's hard for some partners because they feel lonely and they feel like they did something wrong, and you have to tell them, no, you didn't do anything wrong. This is, you know, with me, I was an only child. I was single a lot of my life. I get used to sleeping alone, and I like it sometimes still. You know, that's just how I am. So we've had to talk about it. So that my point is to you and your listeners is that when you have these creative conversations, it's okay. You know, if your relationship is a loving one, you could keep talking about these kinds of things, and you never make your partner wrong. Never.
It's a good strategy.
Dr. Orloff, we have about another minute or two here. We're wrapping up here with Dr. Judith Orloff. She is she's a best-selling author. We're talking to her about her book, The Empath's Survival Guide, Life Strategies for Sensitive People. Are there any key points, and I want to make sure people know about your upcoming workshop, but are there any other key points about discovering if you're an empath, strategies that if you are an empath that you want to make sure we cover before we wrap up?
Well, I would like everyone to take the self-assessment test in the beginning of the book and find out if you are an empath. And I want to say on my website I have numerous resources for empaths that you could get that are all available. And that's at drjudithorloff.com. And my workshop at the New York Open Center is one-day workshop, March 17th. It's for empaths, sensitive people, and everyone who loves them, you know, to come and have a beautiful day talking about empaths and learning strategies to, you know, be an empowered empath. And that's New York Open Center, March 17th. It's 9 to 5. And I'd love to meet you all there. And the information is on my website, drjudithorloff.com, and also the Open Center website. And I also have a free empath support newsletter on my site as well that you could sign up for.
I think what's important here as well is if someone could be listening right now, and maybe these are not characteristics that define you as an empath, but your child, as we mentioned earlier, if you think your child might be an empath, what a priceless book this could be for you as a parent to understand them better and work with their personality characteristics.
So important. There's a quiz in the book, Is Your Child an Empath, that you can go through. It makes a difference in a child's life. If you know that that child is an empath, you can nurture and support them in ways you had no idea before. It's really critical.
Wow. That's huge.
Very good.
Yeah,
Dr. Orloff, it's such a pleasure to talk with you always. You have so much incredible knowledge and your love and passion for what you do. We appreciate you so much.
Oh, thank you. I like being on your show.
Okay, we'll have you back again. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, we've got more to come here with Happy Hour and Jonna and Carol. And Jonna, you had said something in an email about our last segment. Do you really want to play that?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
We'll let that hang right there. Yes. We're going to play that.
We're going to come back. We're going to play that. This is Happy Hour. It's K104.
Jonna and Carol on K104. It's Happy Hour.
Laugh more, stress less. It's Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol.
It's Happy Hour here at K104 with Jonna and Carol, and we have returned. Hello, ladies.
Hello, Frank and Barry.
And Dr. Judith Orloff with us, the Empath Survival Guide, and certainly gave some fantastic hints and ideas and definite directions to take if you feel that you are an empath.
Yeah, and not beat yourself up. You can work around it because her book helps you understand if you are, and then really good specific strategies, things you can do once you understand that make being an empath a more positive experience for you, as well as if you think your child might be an empath.
Yeah, I would definitely give this book a read because people don't know what they don't know, and you could be listening right now and have no idea that this is a thing. You just this is a thing, and you don't know.
It's not a condition.
No,
it's just a personality characteristic.
And you can easily find out by taking the quiz. And then once you take the quiz, you're going to be like, well, that's why.
Like us.
Now I get it.
Yep, that's me. That's me.
Yeah. So I would definitely do that because those of us who feel other people's pain sometimes have special needs.
The other thing she didn't talk about on the quiz, but it's in the quiz in her book, that I can totally relate to is multitasking, mm-hmm. that empaths do not like multitasking. I will lose it pretty quickly if I'm constantly, my attention is dragged here, somebody's, or if there's like multiple TVs going on in a house at the same time, or somebody's asking me a question, or this one's just too much going on at one time.
Too much noise.
Lose it. Yeah. I need focus. I need one thing at a time.
Yeah, I agree. Take the quiz, Dr. Judith Orloff, the Empath Survival Guide. Speaking of pain, earlier in the week, or about a week ago, so everybody's familiar with Fergie.
Love her.
I'm sure. And I do, and I like her. You know, I don't own any of her music, but I appreciate her. Well, anyway, she decided that she wanted to create a special rendition of a song that we don't want any special renditions for, the Star Spangled Banner, to head up at one of the NBA basketball games. And what Fergie did to the song, do you guys remember, I don't know how many years ago it was, when Roseanne sang
when she was in San Francisco?
Yeah, that was horrible.
Before, I think it was before a baseball game or World Series or what have you.
Yeah.
And that actually affected her career for a long time to come. Like, people did not like it.
And she did it on purpose. I mean, she did it intending for it to be a joke.
Sound like, right, but it didn't come out.
She wanted it to be funny. Nobody thought it was funny, and it sort of affected her career. So here comes Fergie, who's a sexy woman. She decides that she wants to essentially sex up the national anthem.
Was that her objective?
Yeah, and to sing it like a lounge singer. So for my money, I'm like, you know, listen, You would never invite the Pope to play a game of spin the bottle. Do not try to sex up the national anthem, especially like now when we've got everybody, you know, just sing it. Sing it lovely, sing it nice, do what you get, you know, look pretty when you're doing it, and all good. So she got a ton of negative reaction.
That she did. And imagine, if you will, this is her version of Happy Birthday, Mr. President.
Yeah, by Marilyn Monroe.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yes, this is kind of what, that's the first thing I thought of. And all I had to do was listen to like the first 20 seconds. And that sounded basically what her model
was. Do you have a clip?
Was. And so,
yeah, I'll let you listen to that. But then I want to talk about her reaction, because I'm actually really proud of her reaction.
Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly wail at the twilight?
I think we got it. All right.
So she's holding a tune. She's got a beautiful voice.
And the only thing missing is a boa.
So, but yeah, the raspy.
The raspy. And she forgot a couple of the words. Like,
did
one
she
of the,
really?
One of the basketball players, I forget who, came out and said, after that song, I need a cigarette. Like, it was,
oh,
you know.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
and the players
gosh.
Were laughing at her. So it got a ton of negative press. It's probably going to continue to get some negative press. But she came out within 24 hours of receiving all the negative press. And she tweeted this. I've always been honored and proud to perform the national anthem, and last night I wanted to try something special for the NBA. She said, I'm a risk taker artistically, but clearly this rendition didn't strike the intended tone. I love this country and honestly tried my best. And when she came out with that tweet, I instantly not only like, quote, forgave her for doing something that was bad, I embraced her. Like, she owned it. She didn't come out and say, all you people suck for thinking I suck.
Right.
She could have done that. She didn't do that. She was like, you know what? I tried my best and didn't work. Sorry about that. And I only intended it to be special, and I'm sorry that flopped.
I think that is the quickest way to diffuse a negative situation like that, particularly if you are responsible for it, is to own it and own it quickly and not point fingers.
Or even own it ahead of time. Even if you know that you have made a mistake and somebody is eventually going to find out about this mistake and it's going to affect what you do. That's when you go in and say, listen, I'm just going to let you know I've been here, or this happened to me over the weekend. You haven't heard about it yet, but just want to give you the heads up. As long as you do own that, at least you're going to gain some respect. Points.
I think you do. I think you gain a lot of respect back. And she could have said a lot of things. Because one of the questions I had was, where was your manager? Like, somebody had to hear you rehearse this. Who said to you, yeah, great idea, Fergie, let's do it up?
Well, if she's hanging around a bunch of yes people and she's got her diva tendency, she can do anything she wants.
That could totally be.
You don't think she had her entourage going, oh yeah, you're going to kill it, girlfriend. It's brand new. Nobody's ever done that. You'll be remembered for that. You know, yeah, nobody's going to say no.
Or maybe her entourage said, it could flop, but so what?
Let's try it anyway.
You'll get the
press. And then maybe they had their responses prepared ahead of time.
They could have.
Depending on how the public responded
to
it.
They could have.
And the other thing is, when is the last time, other than, and I think they've gotten divorced since then. When is the last time that you've heard Fergie's name?
I know, right. She did it.
I think the last time was when she got on a plane for her honeymoon.
She created a buzz by doing this, but I just want to give her, so while everybody's kind of, you know, shooting her down because it did stink, that rendition did stink, I want to give her applause and a pat on the back for coming out the way she did, owning it and moving on.
Did the social media tone shift once she came out with that, owning
no,
that?
No.
Oh, man.
Has not.
I mean, I don't think is like this is like what it was in the past. And I did hear when I was driving into work the other morning, a different radio station mentioned that, oh, this is going to hang with her forever.
I don't think it's
going to stick with her for a long time. And I don't think it is, because, I mean, we've seen the way news cycles go these days for the things that are gone 3 or 4 days later that people are not, for some reason, held responsible for down the line that get forgotten. And, you know, often the case is that it just gets trumped by something else. You know what I mean? Something
worse. Pun intended.
Something else comes along. But still, I don't think I don't think in this day and age, and the fact that she did at least own up to it, I don't think it's going to stick with her.
No, she's fine. And it wasn't intentionally disrespectful like the Roseanne version years ago when she came out and was basically screaming it, trying to be funny. That came across as so deeply disrespectful. And while I don't think the style of this was the best, obviously, I don't think it was grossly disrespectful. Nor did she intend for that.
I predict SNL. This is what should happen. SNL should invite her to be a host
and have her
make fun of herself.
Yeah. And take everyday songs.
And like, do them like Marilyn Monroe style.
Yeah, like Mary Had a Little Lamb. Like some simple basic and like be really sexy on top
Rudolph
of the piano. And
red.
That's exactly what I would do.
Reindeer.
That would be great.
Oh my
God. Make fun of it.
All right, there we go.
No, she'll be fine. I think she's talented. I'm a big fan. I don't think this is going to stick that hard.
No, I think she'll be fine.
Like I said, own your stuff, people. Make the bad crap go away a little bit quicker.
Yes,
it can do immediately.
That.
Yeah, and it did. All right. On that note, since none of us can sing, lick.
nobody wants the tape from the time I sang the national anthem.
Oh, brother.
So.
That's a hard song to sing.
Did you really?
No, I'm just kidding.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's why I said nobody wants that tape.
No,
thank God it doesn't exist.
That's not one of my talents, that's for sure.
All right. Well, that was another episode of Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol. Mm-hmm. Thanks again to Dr. Judith Orloff for coming in and talking about her book, The Empath Survival Guide. If you haven't caught that part of the show, maybe you're just tuning in now.
You can go to k104online.com/happyhour. That's where the podcasts are. You can also go on iTunes. This show is converted to a podcast once the show is done. So you can go to Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol. Search for that on iTunes. You can listen to this as well as any other past episode.
All right. That sounds good. Mm-hmm. Jonna, Carol, thank you, ladies.
Frank and Barry.
See you next week.
See you next Sunday. We'll talk to you then. This is K104.
You've been listening to Happy Hour with Jonna Spilbor and Carol Pesci. More life advice, real conversation, and another awesome interview comes your way next Sunday at 7 a.m. to help you live better, stress less, and laugh more. Until then, catch this week's show and others at the Happy Hour link on k104online.com.